In this episode of Essential Leadership Skills, we're excited to feature Hai Win, a former Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer turned award-winning Director of Protection and Leadership Coach. Mr. Win applies his extensive experience in counter-terrorism and protection to empower frontline supervisors, offering strategies for effective team leadership and addressing challenges like employee retention and trust building. His platform, TeamUp, www.teamup.ca, provides vital coaching for leaders navigating today's evolving workforce. Join us to gain Mr. Win's insights on leadership excellence, the value of coaching for supervisors, and fostering trust in teams for transformative results. Discover more about Hai's impactful approach and how to access his services in our show notes.
This is a Touchstone Publishers presentation, your trusted source of leadership knowledge.
Good morning, Mr. Win. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to today because of that synergy that we're going to build between your experience, law enforcement, and being a leader.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm really excited about the conversation we're about to have.
Yeah, and when I was doing some of my research and going through LinkedIn and some of the other things, your website, I started first questioning me right away. So just to help open it up and get people to know a little bit about, but can you describe a time when you stepped into a leadership role or you watched one step into a leadership role and they got faced with something they weren't expecting and the challenges? How do you get them to address that?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a good example of when I stepped into a big leadership role is actually the role that I'm currently occupying. So I am the Director of Protection Services for a very large university here in Canada. And when I stepped into the role, the team was struggling with a number of issues. There was morale issues and performance issues and various things. And it was the first time for me to step into a role where I was managing over 60 people with many ranks under me. And so I really took some time to think about how do I come into this mix and really start bringing change around. And the one thing that struck me was that I needed to build trust first. That was the very first thing that needed to happen. And so I really explored the topic of creating trust and really fostering trust within the team, but not just with me, but I had to rebuild the trust between the players on the team as well. And so there's a lot of things that I had to do to rebuild all of that.
So when you're building trust, can you give us an example? So maybe coach me, teach me, how do you build trust upon a team that, my words, not yours, seem like they're just doing the bare minimum to get by or doing as much as they could to not do the job right without losing the job. But they had to build a trust for you. Can you coach me on how you, maybe just one example of how you did that and how other leaders should do that?
Oh, absolutely. So I think that the first thing that you need to understand about trust is how trust works. So trust really is like a bank account. So everybody, especially the leaders, we have a trust bank account. So every day you have to try to make deposits into this bank account because your objective is to never, quote unquote, go broke with your trust bank account, right? So every day you need to make these deposits because the reality is everybody makes mistakes. Every leader is going to make mistakes once in a while, or they may have to ask somebody to do something that they don't want to do, or that's not very interesting. And that represents a withdrawal from the trust bank account. And so since you know that you're going to be making withdrawals, you need to make deposits all the time. So it's just like your real bank account. And one of the main things that I did very early on with my team to really foster trust was transparency. I was very open in telling them, here's what I do know, here's what I'm good at, but here's what I don't know. And I was very open in listening to what the issues were, what their perception of the issues were. And we had a very open conversation as to what we felt as a team would be the solutions for these various things. And one of the things that created instant trust, which was a huge technique, which I'm currently teaching other people, okay, is you need to get physically active with your team. Physical activity is a thing that harks back to thousands of years ago, right? When we were cavemen and we were all walking together and hunting together and foraging together, that's what built trust. That's what built community. And to this day, if you go on a walk with somebody, you have a tendency to build trust with them. If you go on a run with somebody, if you exercise, you go to the gym, or you're on the same hockey team or baseball team, it builds these links, these trust connections between people, and it's so important. And my team, they hadn't never had a leader who would go out on a run with them, go out on a workout with them, and so on and so forth. And within the very first few weeks, that's one of the things I was doing. I was out, I was working out with my crew, and instantly I was getting trust from all levels on my team, from the people really on the front line all the way to the mid-level supervisors and so on. I was building trust really rapidly by being physically active with them.
You created a two-part question in my mind. You said that you're actually teaching that right now. Can you give us a little bit of information about how, if someone's listening to this, could say, hey, let me call Mr. Wynn and say, hey, come teach our team this. That's part one. And then I want to, for part two, I want to talk about a dividing line of getting involved with your team. But what about that first part of the question? How can someone get a hold of you? What do they need to do? In other words, I'm giving you a free shot at a commercial here to say what people need to do to get a hold of you to say, hey, I'm open for this.
Yeah, 100%. So look, everybody has who's running a team right now has very, very specific challenges that are actually common amongst many teams. Currently, most team leaders are struggling with creating motivation on the team, getting people to literally get off their backside and getting to work, getting people motivated, getting your team engaged, creating accountability, all of these things. So a lot of team leaders currently are feeling exhausted. They're feeling
overwhelmed. Yeah.
They don't have enough resources, that they're constantly training the next guy or the next girl on the team, et cetera, et cetera. And it's exhausting because most of these team leaders were never taught how to lead people. They've never been taught how to create engagement, how to create trust with their team members. And so that's what I do. I use my 20 years of experience in law enforcement and in leading teams, and using my certification as a certified leadership coach. And that's what I do. I help team leaders really learn the skills. So I don't get into the fluff. I don't do endless PowerPoints and all that jazz. It's all one-on-one coaching where I actually teach you the techniques that actually work to get your team moving and to get your team performing. So if anybody's interested, and if you feel that this speaks to you, you can just reach out to me. You can reach me on my website at teamup.ca. That's www.teamup.ca. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But just reach out, and I offer a 30-minute a free coaching session where we can just chat and talk about what your problems are specifically, and we can roadmap exactly from where you're at now to where you want to be, and we will get you there in 90 days or less.
I'd like to ask you the second half of that question and have you coach me, not in the 30-minute time frame, but coach me and all the other leaders right now, maybe a 2 or 3 minute time frame.
Yep.
Where's that dividing line when it comes to getting involved and doing activities with your team? I oftentimes see the neuro supervisor saying that activity means I got to be doing their job. I got to know how to do the job. But we all know as leaders, we go up and we don't know their job. It's not our job to know their job. It's our job to know our people. Coach me on where that dividing line is because there's also that idea of transparency. There's also a dividing line there. But let's talk about the dividing line of what my activity with my team should be.
So I think that you need to prioritize, right? If the first thing you need to do as a team leader is you need to know your people. You need to understand each and every one of your team members. And one of the things you need to do is you need to know yourself. The real importance behind this is that everybody speaks their kind of own language. So some people, for example, are introverted. Some other people are extroverted. Some people are detail-oriented, or some people are extroverted and they don't go into much detail, that type of stuff. Everybody's got their own profile. And what's important is that you, as the team leader, you need to adapt your conversation style to the people that you're talking to. The analogy to this is, let's say, for example, you, Glenn, speak English and I speak Italian. It doesn't matter if I try to slow down my Italian and I try to speak the best Italian possible. You will never understand what I'm trying to tell you. It's my job as the leader to learn how to speak English to make sure that you understand the message that I'm trying to send to you. So very few leaders right now do this. They don't adapt to their team. What they do is they try to be as concise as possible and express themselves the best way they can, but they're not adapting to their audience. And so let's say, for example, you're having a difficult conversation with an employee, which most team leaders have right now. Let's say you have a difficult conversation with an employee and this person really needs to have everything written down. They like detail, they like dates and times and objectives and resources and whatever. And you need to have that conversation with that person, but you're meeting with that person face to face and you're just having a, hey, we're having a problem with this. I expect you to do this, blah, 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 blah. You're absolutely not speaking this person's language.
Okay.
You're not going to have the impact that you're looking for. Whereas if, for example, with that employee, you would have a quick one-to-one meeting saying, here's the issues that we want to talk about. I'm going to send you all of this in writing so that you can understand what the issues are, what my expectations are, and we'll have another meeting to make sure that everything's clear, and so on and so forth. So now you're adapting to that person's language style and you're 100% going to hit the mark rather than just being using your own style to try to convince somebody. When starting off with a team, one of the very first things that you need to do is literally understand who you are and understand who the people around you are so that you can adapt your communication style to them. You need to literally adapt the frequency of your communication so that you can reach your people and actually get your message through.
Okay. Okay. And that makes sense in a lot of areas. Hit one of my favorite things, seek first to understand, then to be understood, understand where that other person is so I can speak their language. But the pushback I hear about that is there's got to be a dividing line here sometime. I have one message and I have to create 10 different languages or speak in 10 different languages for every member of my team to understand it. I have work to do. Now I'm overloaded trying to adapt for each of these other 10 when I have other work. What do you say to that person? I hope it's nicer than what I would say.
So obviously there's general groups, right? So you have the people that have that want little information, and then you have people that want a lot of information. Some want written, some want audio, that type of stuff. So what you can do, what I tell my people, literally the people that work for me right now, the way I coach them is I tell them, look, give everybody a little bit of information. For example, in a team meeting. Have a quick team meeting and say, okay, guys, we have a new policy on this. And the intent behind this new policy is ABCD. That's it. And then you end the meeting. But in that short meeting, you just direct everybody to say, for those of you who require all of the details, all of the information, it's sitting here in this document that I'm going to be sending all team members and anybody who needs all the details, here you go, you have it all. So you can use kind of a hybrid method to communicate your information. One of the big things that I've done on my team is I've started shooting videos. It makes things so much faster, so much easier, because today's new workers, everybody's on their cell phones, everybody's mobile all the time. And it's very hard and almost inconvenient to have everybody in one meeting room and brief everybody on the one thing. So instead, I record a video and say, hey guys, here's an update on ABCD. I give a general overview of what's going on, upcoming news, that type of stuff. So everybody, anybody, whether they're in the car, they're traveling to the office, wherever they're at, they can just check in the video, get the information they need. And in that video, I link documents that they have access to so that if they need to review a very specific policy, the policy is attached to it. If it's a new document that they need to review, it's all attached to the video. And so I managed to reach all of my people that just want quick information in an audio or video format. They get it. And then anybody who wants more detail, who wants to dive more into a subject, they can just hit the links and get that. So it's proven as a really great tool for me to brief my team and to get the information out very quickly to all the staff all at the same time.
Okay. And so that when you get all that information to the staff at the same time, and you mentioned that earlier, that challenging employee question about that, they call it dealing with difficult people. I just call it dealing with different people. But I'm just wondering, when that difficult person oftentimes, or that different person oftentimes, is being toxic in the office, they're oftentimes carrying a negative attitude, even though you've given them the information that they required it the way they have it, they still find something to be toxic about, or something to be negative about. Mm-hmm. Coach me on how to better deal with that type of person.
Oh my gosh.
I know, we don't have 2 hours, but go ahead.
No, absolutely. No, but it's just, you know, that it's such a great question. I love that question, Glenn, because it brings me back to times when I had to manage some really toxic employees. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that what's been successful for me and what I teach my clients is a combination of two things. First of all, you need to learn as a leader, you need to learn how to have a difficult conversation. So there are specific techniques you can use to really diffuse a conversation and really understand the other person's point of view and then have a productive conversation. So that's number one. Learn how to have these difficult conversations. And once you know these techniques, you apply these techniques with these employees, number one. Number two is all about raising standards. Because one of my most favorite sayings is, get what you tolerate. And that's 100% true. Oftentimes, let's say, for example, on your team, people show up late all the time. You have that because you tolerate it. The day you stop tolerating that stuff is the day it stops happening. So you need to look at your standards and you need to raise your standards. So when you start raising your standards, you start eliminating room for people to be toxic. So let's say, for example, people have poor performance in writing reports, or customer service, for example, is terrible on your team. You need to start raising the standards and keep bringing it up. And that's obviously something that happens slowly, right? And so you have these two things that are working together, right? You're having these productive conversations with these difficult employees. So you're having these conversations, you're figuring out why they're being toxic, you're figuring out maybe solutions to make sure that they're not toxic anymore, or they start correcting their behavior. But if they don't, naturally you're bringing the bar up. You keep bringing the bar up on your team. And so your high performers will never have an issue. They love this stuff. They'll keep producing and they'll keep bringing their own standards up. The middle of the pack will simply follow. They may challenge you, they may gripe a little bit, but at the end of the day, they'll follow, and they'll actually follow your top performers, right? Your top 10%. They'll follow them, and the standards on your team, the performance on your team is going to go up. But your bottom 10%, what happens is they feel the pressure. They now feel the pressure to perform. They now feel the pressure to meet the standards that everybody else is meeting. And natural consequence of this is either one, they modify their attitude, they stop being toxic, and because they want to keep their job, for example, and they join the rest of the team, or they just naturally leave. They will start looking for jobs somewhere else where they can be toxic somewhere else, where they can go and complain somewhere else, where another employer will be more lax, will tolerate more, and they'll just let them be toxic there. And that's just great for your team.
See, now what I wonder about, though, your answer created two or three more questions for me. So we're going to probably slip past the 30-minute mark, and I apologize right away for that. But one of the questions I have, because you said that we have to know how to have these difficult conversations, and there's a system for it. As a leader, and especially some of the senior level leaders, they just had a natural feeling for having those difficult conversations. But you need to show us, teach us how to do that. Now, you can't do that right now. I'm sure the whole system takes more than the time we have. What's that very first step of the system that a leader needs to grab a hold of to teach his supervisors? Here's how you have that difficult conversation. What would you say is the very first step?
The very first step is to understand that you're going into this conversation in a non-confrontational way. And you have to go in this conversation with a mindset of learning, not a mindset of accusing, not a mindset of blaming. Because most of the time, when you're finally having this one-on-one with a difficult employee, it's usually you're going in going, okay, you did this wrong. I need to know why you did this wrong and how are you going to correct this wrong thing you did, right? And these conversations never work. Like, that doesn't work at all. On the contrary, sometimes they make things worse. So the very first step is understanding mindset. It's all about going into this conversation with a learning mindset and literally an attitude of learning, of being non-confrontational and just going in to just understand. For example, Glenn, I read your email that you sent me the other day, and it said all of these bad things about me in the email, for example. I'd like to understand, what did you mean when you said A, B, and C, and so on? So it's all about going in there to learn. And that's the first step. But there's multiple steps to this.
Oh, multiple steps.
And it works fantastically well. Like, this system works really well. And it changed my career. Once I started learning these techniques, it completely changed my career.
Okay. And now, we're designed for senior level leaders who are bringing up their supervisors and getting them up to speed. When you look at these type of things and having those difficult conversations with people to get past things like that, but how do we raise their accountability, their ownership stake into the program? Do you have any suggestions on how do I get my supervisor team or my coaching team to take more ownership. Any suggestions there? And you write about this, don't you? I think he had a LinkedIn article on this a little bit, and I think he related it to the Mounties there.
Yep. Yeah. So accountability, it's, to me, it's all linked to empowerment.
Hold on, stop. If I'm holding you accountable, I'm empowering you. Is that what you're? That's a tweetable thing, I think, if I understand it right.
Yeah, actually, what I'm saying is, if I allow you to make decisions, if I allow you to be creative, if I allow you to come up with your own solutions, you're naturally going to be accountable.
That's such a tweetable statement right there. Thank you.
I think that people's reflex and how we've been taught is to just go, hey, you're in charge. And if things go bad, you're going to own it. You're going to wear this. And that's absolutely the wrong way of creating accountability. What you want to do is you want to look at how your team functions, and you really want to have a culture where people are empowered to make decisions. People have that space to be creative, to come up with their own solutions, and then they'll be accountable for them, because that's what most people who get into leadership in the first place, that's what they want, right? They want to make more of their own decisions. They want to help people that are working for them and so on. If every time they have to decide to either go right or left, they have to ask your permission, then they're not going to be accountable for anything, because they're going to say, I just asked the boss and I have to go left. Rather than you have to empower them to say, okay, let's look at the options. Do you think going right or left, which one's the best, which one the better long-term solution, for example, which one has the best impact, and so on and so forth. And you have, as a leader, you have to let go of control. And that's something that you have to learn as well. You need to trust your people. Again, we were talking about trust. You have to trust your people to make their decisions. And you have to trust that sometimes they will make mistakes. That happens. And you'll help them correct it and not do it again, and so on and so forth. And that's how you build that culture. And that's something that takes time. It takes courage. It takes energy. But it so pays off in the long term.
Wow, that seems like it's really tough. If I think about it, I gotta trust the, you know, I try to understand that if the teammate or the teams, if you give them something to do and you have them say, this is how we're going to do it, how they're going to do it, not how I want you to do it, but how they're going to do it. If I'm understanding correctly, that builds that ownership, which automatically says you're accountable because you said this is how you're going to do it.
Exactly.
But then when you take that very first part of it, though, is that when something does go wrong, it's more of, let me understand why it went wrong, not you did it wrong.
Yep. Yep. And it's, to me, as a leader of leaders, it's almost a tool to identify who should be in a leadership position and who shouldn't, right? Because it happens. Sometimes you'll have a frontline supervisor who's got no business being a supervisor, right? And so if you give one of these supervisors a lot of leeway, a lot of space to make their own decisions, come up with their own solutions, and they don't, because they don't want to be accountable if something goes wrong, then obviously they shouldn't be in a leadership position. And that's just one of the ways you can identify somebody who's, maybe you're not in the right role.
Yeah, but one thing I can see where we might be able to say, yeah, you're not taking on the leadership qualities, you're not making the decision, you're not moving forward, so maybe you shouldn't be in that role. I do wonder, though, since our number one job as leaders is to develop people, and you do this, I'm just using it to call this out. I can't say you do it 100% because we don't work together, but I have had an opportunity to read through a lot of your stuff. And I realize that you do this. Shouldn't we be training that person to be the leader? And if so, what steps would you suggest to help that supervisor become a leader? Because you can be a supervisor, but not a leader. But I want them to become a leader. How do you suggest we help them learn? Is there a learning path you would put them on?
Absolutely. There is such a, and that's such a great question, Glenn, because I feel that in most industries right now, we're not doing that. We're Yes. absolutely not showing this next generation how to lead. And this is why we're having such issues with employee retention and hiring good employees and so on and so forth, because the expression that says good employees don't leave jobs, they leave bad managers. Bosses, bad managers. That's exactly right. That's exactly the problem we're seeing. And the cure to this is to actually teach people how to be good leaders. So yes, you need to teach them how to communicate better, right? You need to teach leaders how to create trust. So we've had a little bit of a conversation about that, but you need to teach them how to empower their own employees. And how you do that is you go with small wins, right? You build them up. You start with small little projects, small little tasks. You teach them techniques. I think a lot of people feel that you're either born to be a leader or you suck at it, right? And it's absolutely false. Leadership, it's a skill. It's not a talent. Anybody can learn this. You just need to spend time either going to a seminar, reading books, of course, listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
You can hire a coach. You can do all of this stuff that will teach you how to become a much better, stronger leader. But when I do it, when I'm creating new leaders, when I'm teaching new people, is I accompany them through the process. And I think that so much to be said about mentorship when we're talking about leadership, right? Having a mentor walk you through how they would handle a situation, or have a mentor guide you to think about different things as you're experiencing your problem. So let's say you're having a problem with a difficult employee at work. You could have read books and went to a bunch of seminars, and this is great. You may learn some techniques, but having a mentor to just maybe call up and say, hey, I'm having a problem with Glenn right now, and the problem's ABC, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I'm not too sure how to handle this. Having your mentor be right there to say, okay, did you have a conversation about this? Did you think about that? These different things. And did you use technique A or did you use technique B for this? And so on. You accelerate your growth in leadership by leaps and bounds. How you do it? I think you do it by teaching very specific techniques. And I think you do it by accompanying your people. So if you're already in a leadership position, right, and you're trying to create more leaders, spend time with them, be there for them. It's so important to have that presence, to mentor them through the process of becoming better leaders.
So I have two more questions for you, but before I give you those two questions, I just want to state something. That reason why I was excited to get you on the program, you just proved it. Our company stands for leaders who want to make a multi-generational change. In other words, not just the person I'm working with, not just the person who reports to me, but want them to be so strong in their leadership, they affect their children. And they're so strong that the children affect their children. We want leaders who can take that ladder, take that step to say, I want to do more than just get by till it's time for me to retire. I want to do more than just help my company grow. I want it to be multi-generational. And you just laid that out for us. So, you know, this is what has to happen to do that. So I want to ask you this kind of follow-up question. I gave you the chance once, but I think it's important that we come back and talk about it right now. What are you doing, you or your company doing right now to help us reach that multi-generational leader?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Glenn. That's really generous of you. So what I do specifically is I have either organizations that have an employee retention problem, or they have a conviction that they need to bring their leadership up on their team. And I actually have mostly people that just reach out to me. They feel stuck in their career right now. They want to get promoted. They can't get promoted, or they're already in a leadership position and they're exhausted. They're completely stuck. They're exhausted. They hate their jobs and they want to get out of that rut that they're in. And so how I do it is that I spend 90 days with my clients and it's nonstop coaching. I'm there for them all the time. So we meet, we officially meet twice a month where we'll go over very specific techniques. So I'll be teaching my clients very specific techniques on how to create trust, how to have a difficult conversation, how to improve their communication styles and so on. So I'll teach them very specific techniques, but then I also tweak my coaching very specifically to every one of those clients. And then throughout the month, these 3 months, what I do is I'm 100% available to them via text message, email, that type of stuff. So anytime they have a problem, they have a challenge, they can text me immediately and go, hey, I'm in the office right now. This is what's happening. I don't know what to do. And then I coach them live in the moment right there. And so they learn extremely fast because it's happening right there in the moment. And oftentimes I have clients who use the audio clip function on their text messaging and they'll, instead of just typing, they'll just go, hey, this is what's happening in the office, blah, blah, blah. And so I just reply with an audio clip and I'll go, okay, you remember how I taught you this technique for having a difficult conversation? Use it. This is perfect for this and blah, blah, blah. And don't forget about this. Don't forget. And just get back to me once you've tried it. And oftentimes we'll go back and forth. And then, you know, by the end, they're like, oh, that was great. It worked fantastic. So that's how I do it. So I spend a lot of time with my clients teaching new techniques, but also troubleshooting, right? A lot of times people have very specific problems and will spend time going through this, breaking it down and figuring out what's the solution to this specific problem that they're having.
That is so powerful. That's so powerful. And again, ladies and gentlemen, check the show notes so you know how I can get a hold of Mr. Nguyen so you can get him or his team involved if something we need to work on for sure. My last question. I don't know why everybody thinks this is the unfair, hard question, but you're going to get it anyway. So the last question is, what question should I have asked you that I did not ask you? What question should I have asked you that I did not ask you?
That's a great question. You should have asked me why people should trust me.
Good question. That's a good question for our organization too. Why should people trust you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm asking, why should people trust you?
Awesome. I think that I have a really interesting blend of experiences, which makes me a uniquely positioned coach. So I have a really extensive background in law enforcement and specifically in counterterrorism. So I've used a lot of what I use for coaching is a lot of stuff that I've learned in law enforcement and specifically in counterterrorism. And I've also been, and I still am, but I've owned businesses. I now work in a post-secondary institution. So I've touched the private sector, I've touched law enforcement, I'm now in post-secondary, like I have this wide range of experience and I've really focused all of my attention over the past, say, decade at learning the most effective techniques. And what I've done is I've applied these techniques in real time as I was learning them, I was applying them with my own team that I'm managing now. And so there's stuff I can tell you that I've learned that absolutely doesn't work or didn't work for me anyways. And there are techniques that have worked 100%. And those are the ones that I teach. Those are the ones that I use in my mentoring and my coaching because that's what I can vouch for. And I can say operationally, I've deployed this and it works 100%. And that's why I believe people can trust me. It's because I have a really wide range of experience and everything I teach, I still use myself and I've tested and retested in the field and everything works. It all works.
Okay, so unfortunately, that question created another question inside my mind, because that was a key, I think, to your success. But can you give us a short example, a brief example, about how your counterterrorism background helps a leader now of a public or a nonprofit corporation?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. So when I was working in counterterrorism, one of the things I was doing the most, one of my biggest jobs there, was I was a source and agent handler. So in the world of counterterrorism, one of the things you need to do is you need to get people to talk to you, to give you information, and maybe even take some actions on your behalf. So you work in an undercover capacity, and you go and you have to befriend these people, and you have to get them to tell you their deepest secrets, kind of thing, right? So to do that, you have to learn how to create trust. You have to learn exactly what buttons to push so that person will actually talk to you, so that person will actually behave the way that you need them to behave. So a lot of these psychological tricks can be used when you're in a leadership position, because it's all, once again, it's all about understanding how you create trust, how you communicate with people. And so I use these very cool techniques that I've learned in the shadowy world of counterterrorism, and I've transposed that into everyday leadership, everyday business. And so you can use these techniques to absolutely influence your employees, influence the people that you lead on your team. And so I use these very specific techniques so that you can push the right buttons and get the results that you want.
That, if we think about that, and it's intriguing to me to start to thinking, okay, in order for you and counterterrorism to get the information you need, you have to build trust. So it's not as much on the line as it is for me to get to build trust with one of my other coaches. But if I had the techniques to do that, how much better would my organization be? Wow. Every now and then, and we've had a few great guests and coming up recently, I think because I'm getting better at vetting them. But I thank you because you're really the top of the line, what we're trying to push for. I appreciate you taking the time. I appreciate you giving me the extra time to cover a couple more subjects. I will, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you'll see all the information you need in the description. Thank you so very much, Mr. Nguyen. Thank you very much.
Glenn, it was a pleasure. And anytime you want to have another conversation, it'll be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.